Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for June 11th, 2023. Globally, there are 424.1 parts per million of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. 424, that's way above the 350 that scientists say we should be at. Plus, there are only 2,396 days left until the year 2030, by which time we have to cut our carbon dioxide emissions in half. Time to get to work. So, recently, up in Salem, Massachusetts, there was a meeting, a public meeting held between representatives of ISO and what amounted to climate activists. And today, we're going to listen to some of the reaction of those climate activists to the meeting. But let me just give you a little background. Of course, the electrical grid that we live in is operated by a group called ISO New England, ISO standing for Independent System Operator. Okay. Historically, it's been a little bit difficult to understand how ISO operates and how it makes decisions. So that's a fact you should know. Recently as well, last fall, activists were able to play a larger role on a subcommittee of ISO called the Consumer Liaison Group. And those activists, given the power to hold meetings with ISO, went ahead and had a planned meeting in near the Peabody Peaker Plant, which, of course, we've spoken of before. Salem's right beside Peabody. There's a peaker plant there that is in an environmental justice zone. A lot of problems with it. So this meeting was held in Salem to basically listen to activists. I mean, the gist of the meeting mostly talked about something called battery electric storage and how we can store electricity in batteries and what the prospects are for that across the state. Of course, that's relevant to these peaker plants, because as I hope you know, the peaker plants operate short-term, high-demand circumstances, like when everyone wants to run their air conditioner. And you could just as easily do that with a battery, a big, substantial battery, and that would be not polluting, would not be giving you carbon dioxide. So it's a good thing. Anyway, most of the meeting was sort of technically about that, but the meeting was an opportunity to probe ISO on how it was responding to the climate crisis, and that happened as well. So what we're going to do today is listen to some of the voices of people who attended the meeting. Again, just so you have some vocabulary, ISO is the grid operator, independent system operator of New England. They're the big elephant in the room, so to speak. The Citizens Liaison Group, the CLG, were the people that were ostensibly holding the meeting. And they are a subcommittee of ISO, recently enhanced with climate activists. You'll hear people talk about battery storage, and storage is kind of a buzzword, but it's basically ways to store electricity and then put it back on the grid when you need it. You may hear a reference to something called NEPOOL, N-E-P-O-O-L, and that's a organization that's related to ISO that historically has governed the New England grid, but is now sort of ancillary to ISO. There are environmental justice zones talked about. Of course, those are areas that are defined in special ways, but mostly represent places that have an environmental burden like Peabody that carries lots of industrial facilities. So there you go. We'll be listening to a set of people, sort of a rump session held after the meeting closed. We'll be talking with Steve Andrada, who's a filmmaker, Sudie Smoller and her husband, who are the founders of Breathe Clean North Shore, Lily Worthley of MCAN, she's the energy director there, and Mireille Bajani, who is leading the Fix the Grid effort for Slingshot. So there you go. That's the setup. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. We'll come back afterwards and try and set up the subsequent conversations as well.
Crisis.
So we're I was speaking with Steve Andrada, who is a filmmaker who made a film, we'll put up a link to it, about the Peabody Peaker plant.
Stop the Peabody Peaker.
So, but we're here at this consumer liaison group meeting. Steve, you spoke before about, well, I guess the question is, why are we here? What's this meeting about? What's your take on what happened this afternoon?
Sure. That's easy. We were fortunate enough that this group of ISO New England's consumer liaison group was smart enough to actually move out of their comfort zone, and instead of meeting in a Westboro hotel room like they usually do, they decided to go to a frontline community, basically an EJ, an environmental justice community like Peabody. It's right here in the middle of the environmental justice area. And they held one of their four meetings this year. It was held here in Peabody. And it was well attended, over 100 people in person, 120 online, lots of great questions. And, you know, it's our only choice. It's our only choice for any kind of input to ISO New England. They're pretty opaque. They are not transparent. And I don't hear much about them trying to be, you know. I mean, the answers that they gave me when I said, when can we put people into the decision-making process? When do we have a seat at the table in the decision-making process?
For the decision-making process for siting energy.
For anything, for market. What we all in here care about is the transition to clean energy. When do we get a seat at the table to help you, ISO New England, make the transition to clean energy? And their answer is, oh, look at our website. We got videos. You can become a participant or whatever. And you're like, oh, come on. Like, it's so bureaucratic. I mean, this whole group makes so much money, so much money. They make more. The CEO makes more money than all four governors of Massachusetts.
The question, though, is, in your opinion, is the ISO's lack of transparency,
yep,
or whatever it is, sphinx-like, I keep saying.
Yeah.
Is that because they're creatures of the fossil fuel industry? They're,
yes,
just complacent?
Yes.
ISO's not making a lot of money. I mean,
just their salaries.
Just their salaries, but it's not like they're Exxon making billions of dollars for, I mean,
yeah,
it's sort of this public institution.
Yeah, but who's sitting at the table? Do you know who's sitting at the table?
No, tell me. That's the right question.
The people that are sitting at the table are fossil fuel companies, utilities.
You would then say that the reason ISO is opaque is because it's owned by the fossil fuel industry.
Hello. I mean, what are we supposed to determine? Since we don't have a seat at the table, we don't have their minutes of their meetings, we don't know what's going on in there, how are we supposed to figure out what's going on in there?
Right.
We have to assume the worst. Oh, let me guess. There's millions and millions of dollars at stake. I wonder what's happening in there. You know, this is America. Right, I know.
I think that's an interesting thing.
I mean, get to a simple thing like, you know, they fall back on this reliability issue all the time. Oh, we needed to purchase so much of this generation and so much of that fossil fuel generation for the winter. And then lo and behold, what happened on December 24th? It failed. The fossil fuel generating plant failed.
I agree with you that it seemed like in this meeting they kept referring to reliability in quotation marks as the sharp edge.
That's their mission.
The knife that they could cut out clean energy with.
Reliability and cost to the consumer.
And so the question I'm posing is, like, is there some third priority between reliability and markets that has to do with the morality
of climate
change?
Save the planet.
Exactly. If you had that in there, then at least it'd be a balance. But now they say reliability, and then that's a cover for doing
everything
they want to do. Right?
Correct.
And
it appears like that, doesn't it? Since we don't have a seat at the table, we don't know.
So, but you, the thing today, you would say that today was one of the first times there's actually been public input into ISO? Your experience? I mean, where does this rank in terms of rattling the cage, shall we say?
This is the second meeting ever of CLG?
I don't know.
I think it's since the committee was formed.
So this is Susan Small joining us. Who is one of the and her
husband, Ron,
Founders of I guess
Breathe Clean North Shore.
My understanding is that the CLG has been underway for 10 years now, quarterly meetings, but that it was just last November that guys like Nathan Phillips and Vitaly, someone you mentioned before,
a whole bunch of new people got elected.
And that's why we're here today.
Because
we have new people on that board, right?
Correct.
And so, primarily promoted by No Coal, No Gas. They're the one who created that ballroom coup.
And
many of the members on the coordinating committee.
There's 12 CLG, and they were fortunate enough to walk in there with 100 people to that meeting and get six elected. Six of us climate activists elected to the CLG board.
Which I say, never going to happen again, I'm sure.
Yes.
And,
you're right about that.
So we're taking advantage of this opportunity. If you get your nose in the door there.
Yep.
You know... It's been a long road, and like, you know, I just got done trying to wrap my hands around what a peaker plant is, and that's how I met all these folks at Breathe Clean North Shore.
This is great, because now we're joined by more people.
But we got Lily here from Mass Climate Action Network, right?
And Marae Bajani of Slingshot, who's going to be back here in a second, so we're sitting kind of in the back corner of the room. Tell me, what do you guys think happened today? Why was this meeting important? Lily, let me throw it to you first.
Yeah.
Why was today's meeting important? What happened? Why are you glad you came?
Well, I'm so glad I came because, one, we just get to hear from ISO New England directly. That doesn't happen very often.
Unless you travel a long distance, right?
Yeah, so it was great to be here and hear what they had to say. I think the battery storage panel was really interesting.
Yes.
They highlighted some concerns that we're having. Like, I managed to ask Anne, the representative from ISO New England, what her thoughts are on capacity accreditation, because we're seeing that as, like, the thing that's going to make or break this whole system of what they're talking about. Our forum was talking about with 100-hour batteries, the same value as a 2-hour battery. That shouldn't be the case.
Right.
And ISO New England agrees. So they're rethinking their capacity accreditation. I asked her questions, and she answered in the way that I was hoping she would. So
good.
That was really exciting. So they're re-looking at capacity accreditation.
In essence, in a nutshell, just by being here, and asking some questions, they're starting to listen.
Well, exactly.
Would you say that?
They're hearing. I mean, it was a spicy Q&A. I think that they're really hearing the passion that we have around climate, around these concerns, making sure it's a priority of, yes, reliability, but also we need to be really pushing forward on fixing all of it, moving towards a clean energy future that is reliable, yes, but also working on demand response, working on different aspects that would make it so that we can have the clean energy future that we know we can. Just having ISO's system work so that we can fit these newly shaped puzzle pieces into the old jigsaw, because they are funky, these new, reliable.
Sure. Let me ask a question, Lily, of this is the thing that the gentleman from Rutgers, who I want to talk to, I mean, he was basically saying, reliability is this priority, and it's an excuse to, license to kill, like James Bond, right? Reliability, you can do whatever you want. Right? What is the comparable, morally-driven climate thing that would be on a par that would then, way back at the beginning, instead of saying reliability, climate, and, we have these two imperatives. Can you say what that is?
They need to add another bullet point into their mission statement. Reliability, costs, and
climate impact, or life of the planet,
or something has got to go in the middle, right?
I think pretty much, yeah. Like, I liked, I have thoughts around carbon markets, but having a price on carbon, having that factored into how we're saying, yes, this is a great resource, not long term, though, because it's killing our planet. Having that be part of the consideration, because right now it's just, solar is super unreliable because it's just when the sun is shining and we don't really know a whole bunch, which, like, I used to work in solar. It's true. It's very variable. Whereas a coal, you just shovel one unit of coal, you get out one unit of energy. It's very direct. So it is a really challenging system to figure out with these renewable energy resources that are coming online. But that has to be part of the equation. It can't just be unreliable versus reliable.
So under costs, it needs to be also human costs.
Yeah, human costs.
It needs to come under just straight up how much you pay for your utility.
Did you freak you guys out the comment that said the haze from the Canadian wildfires is dampening the solar energy production?
Sure, it's natural.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like a cloudy day.
Hadn't clicked
no,
yet,
that's
but I mean, and they can't predict that.
No, they can't predict it, and that's something we see.
But they can predict that more is going to happen.
Like, no, well, you're back to exactly.
Yeah. I mean, when we had solar arrays that were in desert areas, if they had a dust storm, that
to go
production
blow
went
but
way
they also
down,
did
and then
say
it would land on the
haze tended to control the temperature.
Also,
the
you're not demand, not as much
so
demand.
It was
for,
almost
right.
a little
exactly.
bit
so
of
less out. Demand, and then also solar panels work best at like 50 degrees or something like that. So that
well, that's why
solar
batteries have
efficient.
To be part of it.
Yes,
I mean,
do.
The batteries will be the equalizer. The solar will work when it works, and the batteries will pick up when it's a little bit less fun.
Let me ask Lily this, if you don't mind.
No, you go right ahead. This is a
free-flowing
discussion.
Do you think they're going to work with us? Do you think ISO New England is going to actually work with the public and with climate activists?
I think we're making an environment where they have no choice but to. Like, I don't think that there's any way they can ignore us at this point. I don't think that there's any way that they can just forge ahead. I think that it
would
be challenging.
Look terrible,
I
right?
think that we'll be, you know, maybe not working with us enthusiastically, but I think that they will have to, you know, compromise and work with us in some regards. And they recognize this is where we're going. This is what the people want. This is what the planet needs. This is what the people need.
Yeah.
It's a system that was built on stock fuel. It was built on put this much fuel in, get this much fuel out, we use it up, it's gone. And this is a way new energy way of using energy with solar and wind and batteries. It's so different on this old system. So it is. I do hear what ISO is saying. It's really challenging, but also what's the other option? Have a fireball of the planet? Like, we have to do it.
They get paid the big bucks because it's a hard job.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right.
Well, I think today was, for me, great to at least have an avenue of communication.
Yes.
Again. They were just this acronym out there.
Yes.
But I wish that they had a level of accountability to us that... What happened on December 24th?
Remind everybody what happened on December 24th. Just so
ISO New England called on facilities, utilities, who decided not to do it for whatever reason.
They were occurred because of the cold.
And they could not provide.
They told people to turn on their peakers. And
they could not
some of them
fire
were
them
not
up.
Able
them,
to fire
and Peabody
them
was one of them.
Peabody
oh,
was
really?
One of them.
Yeah.
They
oh,
will
oh,
not, yeah. they being PMLP, will not tell us
when it's on, when it's off,
but
or
beyond
why,
that,
why it
or
doesn't what
work.
The problem was. On the
beyond that, that it was a technical glitch on the 24th. It wasn't lack of supply or anything
not
like that,
gas
but they
or
wouldn't,
something.
And a lot of other peakers, evidently, that was their cause for not being on board. But the accountability is, when are you burning, and what are you burning? And why can't we know that?
Why don't we have a dashboard?
Why can't I know today if they're using the Unit 1?
Right.
Or in the winter, if they've truly agreed with PMLP's selections ask to not burn oil in it during the winter, starting now.
They
we
have
don't
it
know
at
if,
their fingertips. Mm-hmm. They have a dashboard that
we
says what...
We
so
say things
why isn't
and
there
nobody's
a,
telling
why
us.
Why isn't there a gauge that
but,
says
but,
this is
but
turned
but to Sudi's
on.
Point is that the first step of accountability is information.
Right. Right.
That's where you begin. Right? Real-time.
How about notes from meetings?
Well, I've got the ISO
how about
the ISO
to
Go app on my on that phone.
Right.
Yep.
ISO
and,
well, actually,
right?
in my...
And that could have everything in it. Right?
Yes. My community comment at the table was... that I would like to see ISO New England build up its wonderful website that has real-time capacity, but it needs to have more information. What's burning? Where? When?
The
DEP gave us a grant to get six monitors, air monitors, portable monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some quality control issues are coming out, but we have those monitors, but nobody's monitoring them. No one's saying, is there a flux in our air PPM2 values because they're burning oil, because they're burning gas, because they're not burning anything, because of our highways or whatever else contributing. But no, we need to look at that, and we can't look at it without the information from ISO.
And that's a simple thing that you can get by demanding and being enough of a pain in the butt, right?
Being a member, a ratepayer of the CLG, and saying we need to talk to you, really talk to you.
So they won't even let journalists know. They hide under the cloak of, well, we can't tell you which plants failed because that would harm their competitiveness or something. So they can't tell journalists anything. Yeah. There's journalists going, what are you talking about? Like, it's, you're a public entity. Like,
right.
Well, you guys are making money off of, you know, everybody's making money off of this. What do you mean you can't tell us who failed? Anyway. More? Yeah. You want more?
Mireille has joined us. Just wanted to, do you have any comment on what happened today? Was it a good thing? Was it, are you elated? Are you disappointed? What's next?
Mm-hmm.
Do you not want to put you on the spot?
I mean, I was thrilled with the way the meeting started with Sudi and Steve and Jerry being able to really ground it in Peabody and say things that I don't think anyone has ever said at a CLG meeting before, especially from the speaker's podium that maybe have been said from the audience, but really to have it be someone who is a speaker, a presenter, talk about the issues of transparency, the impacts on frontline communities, the pollution risk, and all those different pieces, I think was really powerful and a step in the right direction in terms of the framing and narrative of these CLG meetings.
How about the panelists? I thought the panelists, especially the ones from the one that works with the...
Yeah, I think the panelists were... I think the panel was great, offering really concrete examples of how energy storage is. There are a lot of new opportunities, and I noticed how I think Regine, in introducing the panel, reframed it out loud compared to the title in writing, which was the challenges of long duration storage, and instead she was saying more of like the opportunities. And I think that was something that I wish ISO New England had framed this whole CLG meeting more in terms of how are we looking forward and how are we, you know, looking where are the spaces to grow instead of like what are the things holding us back from doing the clean energy transition, because that's what it felt like they were wanting this conversation to be from what that title ended up being.
Right, can I just jump in? I think that the question is, I mean, we go from PBD Peaker, all of a sudden then we go to storage, and the connection is that electric storage of electricity for reuse on demand is the equivalent of a peaker plant. So all of a sudden the replacement for the peaker plant in Peabody is a battery. But then that raises all kinds of other questions about how do batteries fit in across the grid. Most of the discussion today was how do batteries fit in. We ended up with this discussion of the battery that lasts for a week, right, which is really something that's coming in the future. But, I mean, that's the connection, just so the listen, well, people at the other end of that cell phone, right, are listening and saying, well, how do we go from peaker to storage? I mean, that's the connection.
But there's that other story that came out about when we were asking for them to reconsider building this new peaker, since it was now a different time in the world and batteries were more reliable, we were told, no, they're not, and it's not doable. But at the same time, EMWIC was proposing to the forward capacity market a battery project that IS New England killed.
Thank you.
That's the example of what we're fighting against, that we need to not let
like the opposite of what happened to the guy out in the guy with Cogentrix, right?
Yeah, well, Yeah, because, I mean, I think what EMWIC was proposing was a standalone, you know, new battery facility as opposed to transitioning an existing facility to storage. But that ties in ISO New England, and I think that part of the meeting today You know, it's on the one hand, I'm like, oh, I wish we could just have a CLG meeting that the entire meeting is just asking Ann George questions. but on the other hand, I think it would just get really tedious really quickly because she just keeps returning to her same two talking points in terms of an open market and, you know, resource neutral and reliability. And, you know, she has her handful of things that she uses as excuses left and right. And so, because she's a PR person, like, that's her job.
I mean, a PR person, all due respect, right? But they're in their title is public relations, right?
And that's why we want the board members. Right.
She
of the things that...
She actually stood up there and said, I've been doing this for many, many, many years. And I'm like, okay.
No, I think instead of her, it'd be great to have the actual board members themselves, or Gordon, the CEO, or Vamsi, one of the other, I think he's like the
CTO,
one of the VPs
or
something, is have those people come and answer questions and have them be confronted with the ratepayers, you know, confronted by the ratepayers who are expressing their frustrations. Yeah.
And understand
Anne was feeling the heat. Anne was feeling the heat today.
Yes, she was.
I bet he was.
She was ready to get off that stage.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guys,
I was going to just say, I think that they shouldn't make her do it all by herself.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
There should have been other people there that could answer the question.
You know how much money she makes?
Well, I think that, again, as in terms of process, in September in Vermont, someplace in Vermont, sometime in September,
to be determined,
maybe they'll think about having someone who can answer more specific thoughtful
mm-hmm.
questions.
Right?
And the to be determined about why they don't know now is reflective of what happened here. They made a decision as a group. They wanted to come to a frontline community. They approached people here. We did the research on what do we have that we can offer you, and got involved with that. They want to replicate that some way with their September meeting. And the other thing, I got to like pat us all on the back. I believe this is the first CLG meeting that ever had a survey that said, do you like to eat something different? Do you need mm-hmm. a disability access?
Well,
do you need foreign language?
Well,
they've never done that.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's what it's about.
Well, anyway, thank you all so much. It's been very interesting, really fun
chatting.
Thank you.
So there you go. The next little bit of sound we have is a discussion that I had with Mike Jacobs, who is a longtime, very knowledgeable guy. And the stakes in that discussion were around a question of who gets to tell ISO what to do. And technically, ISO spends a lot of time responding to FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission down in Washington. But it turns out that a parallel organization, in fact, that predates ISO, called NEPOOL, NEPOOL, New England Power Pool, they have a role to play as well. And there you go. That's the vocabulary. Here's the sound.
Let's start recording.
First
so here I am, and we're at the Consumer Liaison Group meeting. And it's after the meeting, and we're in a bit of a discussion right now about the role of NEPOOL, New England Power Pool, versus ISO. Who can tell who what to do? It's all very murky. I'm talking to Mike Jacobs and Roy Harvey, who are a couple of longtime guys who know a lot of stuff. So you should believe what they say. So Mike, you start.
Right.
What's NEPOOL?
I've been a member of NEPOOL.
Okay.
Which means I can go to the meetings and have a vote. And the idea is that the NEPOOL predates the creation of ISO New England. And ISO New England was created by NEPOOL.
Not FERC.
No, FERC authorized the agreement that sets it up.
Okay.
But the initiative came from the members. And literally, the New England Power Pool, you know, is 60 or 80 years old.
Right.
All right. So the contracts that have ISO New England operate the grid are contracts with NEPOOL, and then each of the members sign an agreement, the NEPOOL agreement. So ISO New England is literally a contractor
too deep a little.
So if Roy wants to change ISO, the path is through knee pool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you control knee pool, the NEPOOL, which is New England Power
Pool.
Okay. No one knows the acronym. Okay. But the path to control ISO is through knee pool.
Absolutely. USA.
And is knee pool governed by strong procedural ways that are transparent and clear, or is it not?
No, not transparent and clear, but governed and structured.
It is.
Yes. Because it is, because you have all those, hundreds of members in tension with each other. So it is sort of the knee pool structure that allows the warfare by other means
to
be conducted.
This is when the MOPR, the MOPR rule, ISO wanted to maintain this MOPR.
The minimum offer price rule.
Right.
They actually wanted to get rid of it.
Okay, but then knee pool approved holding on to it, right?
Yeah, right. So
what am I talking about, right?
No, the point is that ISO New England is the institution that executes the wishes and the direction of knee pool. And there is a certain amount of independence, that's the letter I. Their board is independent to a degree, and when there is an actual disagreement and NEPOOL and ISO New England can't resolve their disagreement, they can both file at FERC and have FERC sort out the difference. And that's unique amongst the grid operators.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so that shared governance is a little bit odd, but literally, ISO New England's contract comes to an end every 10 years. And I remember, 7 years ago or 14 years ago, the NEPOOL interviewed an alternative grid operator to take over the job.
Wow. Maybe I said this already, but the point of this conversation is that the learning point for me is that NEPOOL is much more powerful with respect to ISO than I had thought.
Absolutely. And everybody's complaint in the room about ISO is doing wrong, their argument really starts with NEPOOL, which at least has a governance process.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Sure. That's interesting.
So, that happened, which I think was interesting. Finally, I got a chance to talk with a very pleasant guy named David McDermott Hughes, who turns out to be a professor of anthropology down at Rutgers, but who follows these issues and cares about it a lot. Our discussion, of course, was, again, a little bit better sound. We were in the back of the room. He was again making the case that ISO's priorities are wrong, and they need to include something other than reliability and efficient markets. So let's listen to that. I'm talking with David Hughes, who's an anthropologist from Rutgers University, who is at today's CLG meeting, asked some salient, pertinent, and insightful questions. So, Dave, tell me, what were you trying to get at in your question of the ISO representative, the person who was speaking for ISO?
Yeah, so it was a question to Ann George, who's the Vice President of External Communications of ISO New England, and I referred back to the mission statement that she articulated to all of us in the audience at the ISO's Consumer Liaison Group meeting in Boston on November 30th. And that mission statement, I paraphrased it, but people could look it up, says something like, in the context of the transition from fossil fuels to clean energy, ISO New England will ensure reliability and the functioning of free energy markets. And I said, those are all nice values to have, but they're in the wrong order, because what ISO did there is push the energy transition into the background as a context that other people are responsible for, and into the and highlight in the foreground that ISO cares about reliability and markets, right? And I would rather encourage them to reverse that and say, in the context of reliability and energy markets, we in ISO are going to do our utmost to ensure a transition away from fossil fuels and towards clean energy, and then even more so towards doing our best to stabilize the climate and ensure the conditions for life on planet Earth. And if ISO New England were an organization that really served the public in the long term and most profound sense, it would prioritize that those conditions of life on planet Earth, which mean that we basically need to retire fossil fuels almost immediately.
In a sense, you're saying that ISO stance is the planet will be dead, but at least we'll have reliability, right? We will
exactly.
have reliability.
Exactly. But when you hear spokespeople from ISO, and including from FERC as well, what they really care about, what really floats their boat, is this idea that anytime you want to turn on a light switch, the light will come on. And it would be an absolute failure if the light didn't come on. And it would even be a failure if the light might not come on. And if ISO encouraged you not to turn the light on, and then you didn't turn the light on, but ISO would be so embarrassed to go to the public in New England and say, hey, you might want to conserve during this winter peak because we have a little bit of a capacity problem. That is such a recognition of failure that they don't want to do that. But I think they need to do that if we're going to transition very rapidly away from fossil fuels. And in fact, the representative from FERC at that meeting in November, he said something very telling. He started his remarks by reminding people that he lived in New Haven, Connecticut for a while. And he said, things were great then. The electric grid functioned perfectly. When I turned the lights on, the lights came on. And so my response to him, as I raised another one of these questions at that meeting, was, you can't mean that the grid was perfect. Because even more so than today, 20 years ago, the grid powering your lights in New Haven was fed by fossil fuels, undermining the conditions for life on planet Earth. That seems extremely imperfect to me. That seems about as imperfect as you can get. Right, and it was like he hadn't actually thought about that because they really don't care very profoundly. They don't identify their mission and their self-worth.
I mean, it's almost like corporate definition of your humanity is to serve the corporate goal. The corporate goal is reliability. That's what makes you human, right? And that stepping outside of that sort of groupthink and saying, oh my, there's a bigger thing here than reliability and functioning markets.
You know, it's the whole idea that the metaphor everybody uses, that the energy system of the human species is the Titanic, and it's going down. And ISO New England has as its mission to make sure that every square table has four chairs around it. And the thing is, the deck starts to tilt as the ship is going down. And everyone's going to say, oh, my God, I've got to move the chair here. And maybe we'll tape the chairs to the table and we'll do something because we will lose our jobs if these chairs don't sit four of them around the square table.
Well, with that analogy for ISO New England, I think we can put it down. Thank you very much for taking a moment to chat.
Thank you
very
much,
really
appreciate it. Sure, happy to be on the podcast,
Oh, my God.
So there you go. That's the Citizen Liaison Group meeting report from June 8th, 2023, last week. I hope you enjoyed hearing those voices, and we'll talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.